And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Batter up! That crack of the bat was loud today. Welcome to No Bunts, the podcast for the casual baseball fan here on The Athletic Baseball Show. I'm Taz Mills, in studio in Atlanta. The man making the magic happen, making that crack of the bat happen, it's super producer JD.
Hello.
What's up, JD? My headphones are just loud.
Oh, but sorry.
Nah, that's not you. I love hearing a loud crack of the bat. And so does my co-host in Taiwan all season long. It's Joel McMillan. Joel, what's up?
I'm doing well. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Beautiful Dodger Stadium behind you today.
Taz, good eyes. You nailed it. I feel that's a giveaway. I saw a cool picture. I saw a cool picture of Dodger Stadium on Instagram yesterday. I was like, I'm going to use Dodger Stadium for the show today. So here we are.
Thanks. Yeah, I usually go a little obscure, make me look a little dumb trying to figure it out. Today you gave me a no doubter.
I gave you a meatball, Taz, and you nailed it.
We played some beer league softball. You tossed that baby right up. I hit a line double, at least. I'm not a home run hitter.
Okay.
Anyways, Joel, we had a great week in baseball this week. It was fantastic. Some great plays. Absolutely great plays. We'll get into some of that. We are going to talk about random baseball formats in history because we were sort of amazed by a couple that we saw that we talked about off air. We're going to talk about the worst fantasy punishments in a new segment called Storytime. I got a ball here. It's in a case. If you're here, and I'm going to pull that out a little bit later when we talk about Jose Bautista and King Felix's team ceremonies. But let's start with the best five things in baseball from the past week. Joel, we had another walk-off bunt. Phenomenal stuff. A walk-off bunt, the second of the season. It was a terrible 72 hours for the Mariners. Three crushing losses, back-to-back extra innings losses included in those, and a ninth inning loss as well. So it sounds like I'm celebrating the Mariners stinking it up, and I am, because the Royals bunted them off. I think that should be a saying. They bunted them off. I love a walk-off bunt. It's no bunts. We got to celebrate. It's the second of the season. It's a very, very, very rare occurrence in baseball, both from the Royals. Fermin did it earlier this season. Then Monday, after the Mariners came roaring back, this is what makes it crushing, over the eighth and the ninth, they erased a 5-0 lead, and they took the lead themselves. They're up 6-5, but bottom nine, the Royals tied it, and then Dairon Blanco pushed a bunt up the first baseline to score the winning run from third. The broadcasters were even calling it watching this one. Oh, he loves to bunt. He loves to bunt. But he put it down right at the last second. He pushed it hard up the first baseline. First baseman couldn't handle it cleanly as he tried to rush because he knew he was trying to throw it home. The second this season, as I said, according to Elias Sports Bureau, it's happened 21 times in the last 20 seasons. That's it. Basically, we're getting one per. No hitters happen way more often, Joel. First question, am I celebrating this way too much? Or are we celebrating it way too much here at No Bunts? Or is it just, it's just fun because it's kind of old school baseball?
It's all the above, Tess. I mean, it's fun. It's exciting. It's rare. I was watching that game because the Jays were off last night and Seattle is very close on their heels. So this was an important game, obviously a Mariners fan as a Jays fan. And it was such a tale of two games because Brady Singer had dominated the Mariners. I think he had a no-hitter going through seven innings, and then the bullpen kind of came apart late. Seattle took the lead, and then it swung back, and the Royals ended up walking them off. It felt like a playoff game. You know, obviously the Royals have long been out of it, but in the ninth inning, fans were standing up, cheering, clapping. You know, Kauffman Stadium was loud. That felt like a playoff game. It was such a crazy finish considering what happened, you know, to the Mariners, like you said, on Saturday and Sunday night with some tough losses as well. But yeah, I mean, it was cool. And as soon as it happened, I texted the group chat. I was like, oh my gosh, another walk-off bunt. And like you said, it's crazy that the Royals have done it twice this year.
Yeah, Royals fans have had things to cheer about last month with Bobby Witt. And yeah, there was a good vibe there. I know you're watching that game. You're also watching another Mariners heartbreak, as we said, three consecutive losses in the ninth inning or later. The Cedric Mullins show against the Orioles prior to that. That was ridiculous, Joel. Take us through what happened with Cedric Mullins. What a show.
Yeah, so he's just come back recently. He was on the injured list for a couple weeks there. And the Orioles had taken the lead late in the ninth inning on a, I don't want to say it was a controversial balk call. You know, going over Reddit, some of the social media people kind of seemed divided on that call. But anyway, Baltimore took a late lead. And then, yeah, Ty France hit what looked to be the game-tying home run, and Mullins brought it back, and there were two out bottom of the ninth. And then Dominic Canzone hit an absolute no-doubter to tie the game up. And then the Baltimore ended up winning it in the 10th. Cedric Mullins hit what turned out to be the game-winning two-run home run. Just an absolute crazy finish. And, Tass, you said it was a bad 72 hours. It almost turned into a bad 96 hours for the Mariners because they blew another game late last night. Now they ended up pulling it out in extra innings. But, yeah, it's been a frustrating kind of couple games for the Mariners. I saw a lot of Mariners fans complaining, why did we trade our closer, Paul Sewald? You know, like he'd be perfect in the situation. So it's been a tough couple games for the Mariners. But previous to that, they'd won eight games in a row. They're back in the wild card. I think it looks worse than it is. It's just really, you know, three soul-crushing losses. But yeah, that Orioles game Sunday afternoon was absolutely nuts, that finish. I've never seen anything like that in a baseball game before.
Yeah, for Mullins to pull that one back from over the wall and then go into extra innings and hit a home run himself. Yeah, that was some great stuff. As we were saying offline, you said it offline, you never know what you're going to see in a baseball game. You always see something new, and for him to do both those things. And that was a real go over the fence, pull it back.
Yeah.
Home run. There's a great photo, I think it's an AP photo, of Mullins literally over the wall and bringing that thing back. And everyone surprised that he was able to do that. So, yeah, that guy's heck of a player, obviously. Great to see him back. And as you said it on our No Bunts Instagram account. Jump on over there. Great conversations that you're leading there, Joel. The Mariners, yes, very tough finishes over the weekend, but still in the wild card hunt and a position to secure one. So great stuff for us anyways. No Bunts getting another walk-off. So fun stuff there. All right. Also fun stuff. We have an MVP race in the National League. We didn't think that would happen, Joel. It looked like Ronald Acuña here in Atlanta, where I'm sitting, and I have been enjoying very much, was running away with it. But Freddie Freeman is a machine. He truly is. And it looked like there was a pretty big gap at the All-Star break. You know, still could respect Freddie's numbers, obviously. He still looked good. But he has closed the gap. Do you think he's closed the gap enough, Joel, to overtake Ronald Acuña at this point, though?
I would say so.
Really?
Just quickly comparing their stats test. So I use FanGraphs. I'm not saying it's better or worse. It's just what I use. And so they're both ranked as negative defenders. So that's kind of a wash. Obviously, Acuña has the steals. But then when you look, for example, their weighted runs created plus, Freeman's is 170 and Acuña's is 167. So just a difference of three. Their war is almost identical. Freddie's got a 6.0 war and Acuña's a 6.1. Freddie's got 23 home runs. Acuña's got 26. Freddie's hitting 339. Acuña's hitting 337. And Freddie's OPS
Those numbers have changed since last night, Joel. Acuña's, okay, whatever. They always, slightly. They're flipping
but
and flopping.
But I mean, yeah, they're pretty much neck and neck. So then it comes down to, like, I think this is exciting because it's kind of like, it's hard to make a case for either one. I don't think it's as cut and dry as, well, Acuña's got a lot more steals, so he's a slam dunk. I don't think so. I think they're obviously very different offensive players, but they're both having great seasons. I really don't know who I would give it to at this point. I'd probably lean towards Freeman. Just because going back to, well, if you took each player off their team, how good or bad would they be? And Atlanta's just so deep. And I know you can't, that shouldn't hurt Acuna's chances or fault him, but I just think if you took Freddie off the Dodgers, they're a much, much different team. So in the vein of like most valuable player, I'd probably lean towards giving it to Freeman, but I could absolutely see a case for Acuna, and I wouldn't say you're wrong.
I can't believe how close the numbers are across the board in terms of the average on-base percentage and then OPS, because they are just having incredible years and they're neck and neck. I think anecdotally, Acuna's got a little bit more going for him, I would say. I think just because you see some of the steals, you see some of the flashy plays, you see some of the pitcher turns his back and Acuna grabs that extra bag. And so there's a little bit more of those moments later on in the season if you're evaluating it that way. But if you're evaluating it by the numbers, as you said, it's really close. I don't understand how some of these sites, like you said, Fangraphs versus Baseball Reference, they evaluate WAR differently or they calculate it differently. I don't get it because Acuna is running away with WAR over Freeman. As you said, it's different on Fangraphs, but he's running away with it on Baseball Reference. Why don't we get our ducks in a row? Or maybe Fangraphs is the Bible. I don't know. But all that to say, do numbers make it a little bit more of a boring conversation when it comes to the MVP? Like, is it a little less fun to talk about it because you can basically just say, well, Mike Trout's got a better WAR. He deserves to win it simply because he adds more to his team.
Well, I kind of think those are two different questions you're asking. I mean, are you saying, should we just base it on WAR or like are statistics overrated? All baseball is completely just predicated on stats. It has been, you know, since its inception. Obviously, the evolution of how those stats are used to judge performance has evolved over time. No, I don't think it's as simple as giving it to the player with the highest WAR. I think it's a bit more nuanced than that. And if you look at previous MVP votes, there's been plenty of MVPs who have won it and who were maybe second, third, or even lower in WAR for that matter. So, yeah, it's a bit more complex than that. But, yeah, I mean, you need, like, how else are you going to evaluate a player and their performance during the season? Like, what else could you really use at this point? It's a question for you, Tess. I don't know.
The brightest colored elbow pads or shin pads. And that goes to Ronald Acuna, for sure. Well, yeah.
Lock it in.
I appreciate that it's... It's both. I think it like the moments have to play into it. Yeah, obviously team performance, obviously stats. I appreciate how you're saying that all of them matter because otherwise, yeah, it is. It's just boring to just give it to the top player when it comes to WAR. And as you said, this is the podcast for the casual fan. So it's good to know that the last few years, several years, it doesn't go to just the person with the highest wins above replacement. It can go to someone else.
Yeah. Well, Tess, let me ask you. I mean, who, like, if you had a vote here, I know you love your Braves. You know what? Freeman was a Brave. I know Freddie's your boy, too. So you're kind of in a tough position. But if you had a vote right now, like, who, like, I'm leaning towards Freeman, but who would you vote for?
I'm still giving it to Ronald Acuna.
Okay.
Leading the league in on base percentage. The numbers are really, really similar. He shouldn't be punished because he's on a better team.
I agree.
The numbers are literally almost identical across the board. In a lot of categories, and not in some categories. And our man Ronald has slowed down in terms of the 40-40. Like now everyone's saying, okay, 30-60 is where he'll land. And that's pretty amazing because he is leading the league in stolen bases with 55. And at 27 homers, he'll surpass 30. But it's very unlikely he's going to do the 40-40, leading the league in runs and leading the league in caught stealing, which is really, really important because he's been caught stealing 9 times. He's going for it, Joel. Yeah.
Good.
Just like you go for it with your valuations. All right, let's move on. Yeah, you said I'm a Freddie Freeman man. I'm a Ronald Acuña man. Yeah, I get to go to the ballpark here in Atlanta, but I'm a Jays fan through and through. And that brings us to a couple players honored by their respective teams this past week. Jose Bautista signed a one-day contract, and his name was put up in the level of excellence in Toronto. He had a run, just quickly. 9.5 years with the Jays, six-time All-Star, 288 home runs in that span. That's pretty great. And the bat flip heard around the world, of course. And Felix Hernandez was inducted into the Mariners Hall of Fame. King Felix finally said he's truly, truly retired last month, so it was time for Coronation Day. He pitched 15 seasons with the Mariners, one of five pitchers in baseball history to throw more than 2,500 innings and have more than 2,500 strikeouts with one franchise. He's still only 37, so there was, you know, a little rumbling. Is he going to come back, even though he hasn't pitched for a couple of years? So, Joel, I know that you are a Jose Bautista fan. I know you may have got a little sentimental watching Jose Bautista put up in that level of excellence. I don't know how you feel about the level of excellence in Toronto. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird to say. But overall, the Jose Bautista experience for you, how was it?
It was emotional task. You know, he's my favorite Blue Jay. We've talked about it on a previous show. It's deserving. I think everyone knew this was going to come. He's had his iconic moment, obviously, with the bat flip, as did King Felix with his perfect game. You know, as a Jays fan, Bautista is a lot more important than I think a lot of people give him credit for. You know, like you said, he came to this team kind of in obscurity. He was, you know, there wasn't really much talk about him when he came over. He was traded for, I think, cash or player to be named later. And yeah, he blossomed into this mega star. But Tass, that 2015-2016 run, like, that attracted so many new fans to Blue Jays baseball. And that's kind of the next generation that you see at the park and who are passionate Jays fans and have turned so many of those people into casual fans to real fans. And every fan base needs that. And Jose Bautista was the guy. And I saw that talked about in a report on him, and that I can't understate that. I mean, for all the great things he did on the field, I think he's a Toronto sports icon. It's unfortunate that he fell short. But I think the ceremony was awesome. I think he's a very classy guy. I know he's a classic baseball villain, but when you watch him, you know, when you watched him gave his speech, it was very heartfelt. He loves being a dad. So it was just great to see. And he definitely belongs on that level of excellence. He's one of the most iconic Blue Jays of all time.
The level of excellence. it's a huge ballpark. Numbers retired for other sports. But when it comes to baseball, you just got to throw it up on the ribbon. It's just up there. It's sort of up there. And that's cool. That's fine. So that honor, as well as King Felix's honor, it brought up a question for us, and you threw it up on Instagram, which was a really good question. If your player, your team has a player that's in both Cooperstown and has been honored by your team, which means more to you? And I'm surprised, looking at the poll on Instagram, that it's almost 50-50. Franchise has a little bit of a lead on Cooperstown, but it's 56-44. Where do you land? Which means more to you?
To me, I like, as a Blue Jays fan, like, we only have one, and I believe it's Roberto Alomar, and, you know, I kind of have mixed feelings about that. But to me, like, it would be more meaningful to see him go in, like, the being inducted into the franchise, like, the level of excellence for me as a Blue Jays fan, because you share that connection with that player. Like, that's not something you need to share with other fan bases. I feel like it's just kind of a closer relationship, a closer dynamic. So I think it's more meaningful to see a player get inducted into the Franchise Hall of Fame. Obviously, it's amazing, you know, in Cooperstown, and you see a player get inducted from your team. I mean, sure, like, absolutely. How could you not enjoy that? But in terms of, like, being more meaningful, I mean, like, Jose Bautista was ours. I mean, I know he played for a couple other teams, but, you know, we claim him as ours, and, you know, he sees himself as a Blue Jay. And it's, I think it's meaningful. And I think if you ask a lot of fans, I'm not surprised it's close in the vote test, but I would wager to say that fans probably see the franchise one being a bit more meaningful. But that being said, how do you feel? What's more meaningful to you as a fan?
I would say the dogs agree with you, by the way. I don't know if you can hear them barking in the background, but they say franchise, franchise, franchise. And I got to agree with you. I visited Cooperstown. I know you say Robbie Alomar is the only Blue Jay, but I took a photo beside Paul Molitor's bust. I claim him, but obviously he's not, you don't think of him as a Blue Jay first and foremost. But yes, it's far less sentimental, guttural. Like the emotion isn't there. You saw Jose Bautista put up in that level of excellence. Mm-hmm. It means far more. There's less emotion involved when you're sitting beside those busts in Cooperstown, although it's, really fun to walk around. But it hits more at home. Just like Jose Bautista said, there's just that connection. Like he said, this city really embraced me, and people outside of Toronto may say, players say that, but that really happened in Toronto. And there was that connection. Although I will say, I hope he does. Well, he's not Cooperstown bound at this point, but it would be great for me if he was Cooperstown bound, because I do have a signed ball from him sitting here with me. It's in this plastic case, and I was reminded of it when he was honored. It's a little difficult to pull out. I don't know how I pulled it out that quickly. The signature is fading on this ball. I don't even remember how I got it. No certificate of authenticity. You can barely see it. There we go, JD. We're showing it to you here in the Classic Factory. Jose Bautista and his number.
Nice.
Yeah. It's fading, though. I think I got to put it in a better case, because the air is getting to it, I think, Joel.
That in a humidor, Taz, ASAP.
Got to lock it up. All right. Great stuff. Great stuff by both Seattle and Toronto to make that happen. And, the mural of the bat flip that was also painted this week in Toronto and Jose Bautista visited with his fam. Also very cool. Like to see that in person.
Yeah. And congratulations to both guys. I still watch.
We knew we weren't going to talk about King Felix. We knew we were going to talk about Jose Bautista.
Just really quickly, yeah. I don't want to be total homers, but I watched the Hernandez ceremony and it was amazing. The video was really cool. It mirrored his timeline while there was like a blacksmith working on a crown, and it showed his whole career highlights. And at the end, there was a crown made for him and he came out. The video production was cool. It's just like, I loved watching Felix Hernandez pitch, like as a baseball fan. I just didn't have that emotional connection. Mm-hmm. Like it was cool to see and tears were shed. And I know for Mariners fans and his teammates and all that, it was special, but you just don't have that connection. It was cool to see, but it was very different from Bautista.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Jose Bautista was at least involved with some form of winning. There was some playoff performances there, and Felix Hernandez, even though it was 15 seasons and obviously phenomenally went through the stats, there wasn't much winning, and so it was a level of obscurity as far as, the fans outside of Seattle, I would say, the fans across baseball. So that part, unfortunate, obviously. All right, moving on. Somebody who was the next big thing a long time ago is back with the Astros. John Singleton is back with the Astros. He was in Houston and was the next big thing with them a long time ago. He signed a 5-year deal before he made his MLB debut in 2014. But it went bad over the next few years. Poor performance, drug suspensions, and ultimately a 2018 release. It's been a long road back. Now, he was with the Brewers earlier this season, but he was DFA'd. The Astros signed him up. He played in the minors, and he was called up August 8th. He's played several games now with the Astros. Joel, how pumped were you when you heard this news about Singleton?
Yeah, this was awesome. I had no idea about this story until I saw that he had hit the home run and it kind of blew up over social media. You know, Tass, a lot of people want to bag on the Astros for the things they've done in the past, but kudos to them for giving Singleton this opportunity, for sticking with him. I mean, this was a guy that, you know, like you said, was drafted with Houston. They paid him. It didn't work out. His career kind of went south. And they had all the reason to just basically cut ties and never deal with this guy again. So really, you know, like, credit where credit's due. Good for Houston for giving him another opportunity. And it's kind of bittersweet to see this. Like, it's great that he's getting a second chance. He's obviously not over the hill, but, you know, several of his prime years have been wasted, you know, due to this. Obviously, attitudes are changing towards marijuana use. You'd said drug suspensions. It was due to his marijuana usage, and he was open with that publicly. You know, he spoke about that. But at the same time, like, it was still a banned substance. This is always kind of the difficult situation with this is, you know, people don't really care about it one way or the other, but still a rule is a rule and you have to follow it. So it's kind of tough in that sense. But either way, like, he's worked extremely hard to come back. It's great to see. And Tess, I don't know how the Astros do it, but they just seem to be able to pick these guys out of obscurity. They did it early with JP France. We talked about it. And now with Singleton, it's just kind of next man up with that team. And they're just great success stories. And, you know, kudos to him, you know, for never giving up on his dream and coming back. And it's just awesome to see.
And with Jose Abreu on the IL, he'll get some time. He's going to get a shot. Now, he hit that home run. He had a 3-hit game, but that's unfortunately the only game that he's got hits in his 7 games played. So I wonder if Desty's going to play him when Abreu comes back, because he seems to be dedicated to Jose Abreu. So that'll be interesting if he'll get the shot like France did, as you mentioned, on the hill, who was called up from the minors as an older player and has still done it, still doing it. Like you said, they find guys. So with Abreu out, he's got an opportunity. So we'll see what Dusty Baker does. A small other story with the Astros I found pretty interesting. Your man Kyle Tucker, he used to go old school in the batter's box, never put on batting gloves. Very rarely. He said when it was cold, he put on batting gloves. But he was originally just grabbed the bat, old Rance Molinex style. And go up and hit. And he had a pre-pitch routine where he'd step out after every pitch, bend over, grab some dirt, and put it between his hands. It was just kind of a rhythm thing to catch his breath, and then he'd step in. But with the new pitch clock, he's tried it. He's tried to make it work, but he's even tried to speed it up, but he said it's too fast, and he gets in there, and he kind of loses his breath a little bit. And so he's going to batting gloves now full time, so he doesn't have to do this. And you know, you can look at the stats and say, oh, the batting gloves are working. He's been awesome since it's been, you know, over, I think it's like 2 months now, and he's been awesome. But he was also awesome before that without the batting gloves. Right. So it really hasn't made much of a difference. He hit a bomb yesterday to seal the win against the Marlins, and there's a great story on it written by Chandler Rome on The Athletic. Best sports writing in the world. If you want to read that, theathletic.com/baseballshow or theathletic.com/nodunks to sign up. Because it's a cool little story. You know, when you get in, that's what baseball's all about. The details. And it's pretty fun. I don't know how you feel about your man, Kyle Tucker. Your pick for 40-40 before the season. His 23rd homer, he's probably not going to reach it. But cool little story.
Yeah. I still think he's got a shot. I don't know how many stolen bases he has.
You're a wild man. You think he's going to get 17 dingers in the last 40 games of the season or whatever it is?
I think he could go. Could he go 30-30?
Sure. I got to check his steals, but I assume. Yeah, he's no problem. No problem doing that. Let me give you this.
I'll take a 30-30.
You'll take a 30-30. He's 23-24 right now. So, yeah.
He's got a legit shot. Yeah.
He's got a legit shot. Baseball is exciting because stolen bases are happening. And that brings us to our last point here in the top five things from baseball this past week. MLB attendance is up 9.3% this season. We looked at it at the end of May. MLB put out their info saying weekends have been awesome at the ballpark. April and May during school. Okay, sure. So it's increased, but it's carried over after May. Into June, it was up 8.2% at the All-Star break. But July and August are here. That's baseball time, baby. So MLB got another bump. It's up to 9.3%. It's a trend league-wide. 24 of the 30 teams have had an increase in attendance, an average of 2,424 more fans per game throughout the entire league. That's a real number. That's a big number. And overall, we've talked about it before with the pitch clock and more steals. It's simply because MLB has adapted to the time. It's faster, more action. And I love this chart on MLB.com from Anthony Castrovince, because he pointed out, if you go day by day, attendance numbers have increased the most on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, which speaks to me, which just says to me, people know that baseball is faster and that they can get home on a weekday when they got to go to work, mm-hmm. or kids have to go to school. Monday's up 5%, you know, year over year. Tuesday's up 14%. Wednesday's up 12%. Thursday's up 12%. And then Friday's up 7%. So to me, obviously, the rules are working because people want to see more baseball, Joel.
Yeah, that's a great stat to point out, Tess. You know, we've talked about this as well. It's a more exciting product. It's faster. It's just the presentation's much better. Like you said, it's quicker. People can get home at a reasonable time. But also beyond that too, Tess, like adding the extra wild card team is also closely connected to, you know, why attendance has gone up. You know, for so many years, you know, within the past maybe 5, 6, 7 years, you had a lot of teams tanking. And so there were fewer teams in contention. But now with the extra playoff teams and, you know, Philadelphia kind of had that Cinderella run last year, it's exciting. You know, even if you're 3 or 4 games out, you know, you're not out of it by any means. So you've still got all these teams kind of hanging around playing competitive, meaningful baseball. And even the interleague series, you know, I feel like a couple of years ago was more of like a novelty thing. If you were like a Chicago transplant, you know, living in Boston and the Cubs came to town like once every 3 or 4 years, it was really cool. You could cheer on your home team from your new city. But, you know, you can do that now, but also the games are meaningful. You know, all these interleague games, they mean a lot, you know, for both teams. And it's just exciting to watch. And I feel that not too many teams are really truly out of it. And that's also a big reason why you're seeing a higher attendance as well.
It's absolutely a reason, the increased playoff spots, for sure. We saw it at the deadline, even. Mm-hmm. We didn't know, like, who is buying, who's selling. There were just so many more buyers because they had a shot. You know, so that just proves that teams are more into it. Fans directly because of that are more into it as well. I want to point a few comments out from the Bleacher Creatures who are watching on YouTube. Ziggy says, instant success. I like the game much more. And you can see that in the stats. Eric Harper says 9.3 is significant in terms of an attendance bump. I totally agree. And Lawrence C. brings up a good point that I was definitely thinking about when looking at the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday bumps in attendance numbers. He writes, loony dog factor. And for those who don't know, in Toronto, Tuesdays, hot dogs are $1, which is also known as a loony in Canada, at the ballpark. So I was also thinking, like, what's going on here? Are there just deals? Are there just deals going on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday? But if it's league-wide, I just said, nah. I figure that the numbers are totally legit. Although, Lawrence brings up a good point. Numbers are up. Numbers are absolutely up in Toronto on Tuesdays because of the loony dog factor. And we talked about our group chat. Actually, because Tuesday was yesterday, our man Gavin put in a little poll. What do you put on your hot dog when you go to the ballpark? And I know you've got a controversial condiment selection.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I don't think so. For me, it's not controversial, but for the casual fan, for the casual hot dog fan, it might be. What do you put on your dog, Joel?
These were all toppings I put on that were made available to me getting street meat in Toronto. So I don't really see how it's controversial, but right. I'll put mustard, hot sauce, cheddar cheese, bacon bits and green olives on a hot dog, and I will destroy that in my sleep.
I didn't see. Holy, you're a five-tool hot dog player. I didn't see five condiments coming from you. I thought it was just olives and mustard, but you come with that cheddar cheese drop and the bacon bits drop. Jeez.
You have to.
JD,
you have to.
Yeah, he's totally I forgot about the Toronto street meat options because there is cheese. Mm-hmm. People are putting mayo on their hot dogs. Cheese, mayo, bacon bits, all that stuff. But I forgot about the green olives. Sauerkraut is one, obviously. But I mean,
yeah.
Wow.
Even a street meat, like, I'm a mustard man, maybe some onions, like fresh chopped onions. And sometimes ketchup if I'm feeling, you know, like I want to harken back to when I was 10 years old. Mm-hmm. But that's it. Just keep it simple. I like my glizzies. Simple.
Yeah, we're talking about hot dog stands on the corners in Toronto, which is an experience rival New York's for sure.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
But at the ballpark, I assume the condiment selections, it's pretty standard. It's ketchup, mustard, relish. I don't think it's much more than that.
You would know better than me, Tess. Yeah, I haven't been, been in a while.
It has been a minute. But I didn't know I was opening up a can of condiment worms here. Everybody jumping in. Great stuff here in JD. I mean, that's a whole other show. We're just talking hot dogs and glizzies.
I can absolutely talk about condiments for an entire afternoon. We could do a 5-hour show on condiments.
Okay. Well, we're right now it's 9 p.m. where you are. We're going to have to start a lot earlier that day. You know, where we got a 12-hour time difference, so we go 6 a.m. here, 6 p.m. you. We got that's a balance. We'll go 4 hours on condiments. That'll be fun. Okay.
I'm in.
I know you're in, and I love the olive pick. I put olives basically on everything. It's just salt. It's literally salt. It's great.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It's time for a new segment here on No Bunts. It's time for obscure historical baseball facts. Yeah, baby. We got a new sting. Check them all out here on YouTube. The Athletic Baseball Show feed on YouTube. JD doing some work because we were discussing something off air. We were discussing some random historical stuff this week, Joel. You saw on Reddit there was some strange stuff going on with DH use in the World Series in the 70s and the 80s. And we thought, what? That can't be true. We'll get into that. And that got us talking about strange formats or rules that MLB has used. We'll talk about a few here. We're not going way back to the 1800s when it was an out if you caught a ball on a hop. Like, we're not going crazy. But let's talk about a few different formats here. First one. The DH was used in both ballparks during the World Series, but just in alternating years for a while. Strange stuff. This is weird. So when I think of the DH in the World Series, I think DH in the AL park, pitchers hit in the NL park, done and done. And that's the way it was until the universal DH was adopted from 86 to 2021. But before that, just before that, when the AL adopted the DH in 73, MLB took a while to come up with what the World Series plans were for the DH. So 73 to 75, the World Series did not include a DH. Pitchers hit. Okay, so regular season, there was a DH in the AL, but World Series, nah, we're just going back to the way it was. But here's the real weird part. In 76, they wanted to throw the DH in there, but only during even numbered years for a while. The DH would be used in all World Series games, both parks. But again, just in 76, 78, 80, 82, and 84, DH in both parks. And then 77, 79, 81, 83, 85, only pitchers hit in both parks. And then they changed the rule in 86 to what we commonly know as DH in AL parks and hitters in the NL parks. So you brought this to my attention, Joel. This is good stuff. I had no idea. This seemed pretty weird. Did you have any idea?
No. And I mean, I'm definitely not a huge baseball historian, but I feel I know my stuff relatively well. And I had no idea. I came across this on Reddit. And yeah, like you said, we talked about it offline. A couple fun facts about this, because there's really not a lot of information about this because, yeah, it didn't last long. It only lasted for 5 World Series. But Dan Dreisen was the first to come to bat as a DH in the World Series. But there was a runner on first base and he was thrown out. So the guy who actually got the first plate appearance went to Lou Piniella as the DH. I thought that was a little bit of a fun fact.
That was I was reading that too. That was the Phillies. He was with the Phillies.
Phillies, yeah.
Lou Piniella with the Phillies.
Yeah, and in terms of overall wins, when I looked at this, so the National League won 15 World Series games, and they won 3 World Series during this span. The American League won 13 games, and they won 2 World Series. So, again, like small sample size, but that's pretty evenly split. I don't know where this was rooted in, if they wanted to make it more equal or more competitive between the teams. I'm not really sure. That was hard for me to find. But if it was, I mean, clearly it didn't really favor any team. I would have thought that, oh, because, you know, the AL can't use a DH in certain years, maybe it's a disadvantage, but not really. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. It was almost dead even.
Okay, let's now move to a recent format change that I think we'll look back at and say, that was weird. Maybe not, like, maybe not right this second because it's kind of recent, but from 2003 to 2016, World Series home field advantage was given to the team from the league that won that year's All-Star game. I guess it doesn't feel weird now, but I don't know. Does it feel weird to you, Joel?
No, it was weird. It was bad and it was weird. It was a knee-jerk reaction to the fiasco in 2002. In Miller Park, Bud Selig's home team got booed at home when the game ended in a 7-7 tie, and baseball got dragged by the sports media and fans, and rightfully so. I mean, it was an embarrassment. So, you know, they thought, I think the tagline Fox said was like, "This time it counts." That was their marketing material. And there was, I just want to read this quote from Selig. This was his justification. He said, "This energizes it. This gives them something to play for. People pay a lot of money to see that game. They deserve to see the same intensity they see all year long. Television people pay a lot of money for the game. It was not and should not be a meaningless exhibition game." I think that's just lip service. You know, that's more PR than anything, him trying to sell this as being a meaningful game. I don't think fans really bought it. You know, people don't watch All-Star games for the stipulations or because they want it to count. I think they want to see a competitive game, but I think they just want to see their stars play next to each other and see the best players play. That's it. Whoever wins, wins. It's a meaningless game. But a digger deep into the numbers here, Tass, the American League won 11 of the 14 All-Star games played under this rule, and AL teams won the World Series 8 times during the span. And oddly enough, from 2010 to 2012, the National League won 3 straight All-Star games, meaning they had home field advantage. And in those 3 years, the National League team won the World Series. So I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, this was a ridiculous rule that I think it was coming from a good place, but poor execution, not really needed. And I don't think anyone really liked it. And I'm glad that they scrapped it because it's just ridiculous. But I mean, I'll give them credit for, like, at least trying. I just think it went on for longer than they should. Initially, it was only going to be a 2-year experiment, but they obviously extended it out for longer than that.
Yeah, I think they've got the right recipe now, which is home field advantage in the World Series goes to the team with the higher record. And even prior to this All-Star experiment, it was just alternating leagues in terms of home field advantage in the World Series. Mm-hmm. You know, 1 year to go to the American League, 1 year to go to the National League, which also ain't right. I think we're at the right spot now. And I think this is, you know, as we go through a few of these and we go through the rule changes and we go through, you know, smaller bases and all that, it shows that MLB evolves with the times. And yeah, this one was way too long. 14 years to figure out that, come on, a meaningless game should not dictate who gets home field advantage. But it's known as a game that is for, you know, in general, as a general rule for older fans, that doesn't evolve, but it's obviously evolving here and you know, trying to improve itself, and it's working. Final one here, which was a strange one as well. From 59 to 62, there were two All-Star games played each season. The second game was added to raise money for the MLB player pension funds, as well as other causes, but the experiment was later abandoned because it just turned down the appeal of the event. Two pointless games with largely the same rosters instead of one. I had no idea, Joel.
Yeah, this one fizzled out as quickly as it came. Like you said, it was just basically a cash grab. It came down to money. They wanted more money for their pension funds. And like you said, it was the same roster. And when I was reading about this, basically the fans just almost immediately rejected it. They liked the concept of one All-Star game to see like all their stars playing, but two just kind of took the shine off of it. And also the games were played very close to each other. 1959, the All-Star games were played 27 days apart. In 1960, they were actually played just 2 days apart. And in 61 and 62, they were played 20 days apart. So, yeah, nothing really positive to say. The only thing I can really think of, like, as a fan in terms of a silver lining to this is, you know, travel's much easier. Like, you can hop on a plane and you can be anywhere in the United States. The ease of travel is much easier. But back then, you know, if you're a baseball fan, if you're living in a certain part of the country, maybe you're not able to, you don't have those travel abilities at that time or the resources to do that. So having another All-Star game during this very brief time maybe gave fans a chance to see a player that they really liked that they would not otherwise have a chance to see in their hometown. That's the only really silver lining I can think about it. But yeah, it just seemed like a ridiculous idea. Fans rejected it pretty quickly. And yeah, it kind of was DOA after that.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB show.
That was fun. It was fun going through the history of baseball because it's deep. So I'm sure we'll bring up some other obscure historical baseball facts and bring up this segment again because it was a blast. But let's end this show with a little tale. It's time for No Bunts story time. Another news segment. Little tale here. It was pretty fun in baseball this week. Giants TV broadcaster Dave Fleming usually calls games from the booth, but because he had such a poor performance in his fantasy league, he was required to be the bat boy for a day. He got dressed in the Giants uniform, and he did it. He's a 47-year-old man. He ain't a bat boy, but he was out there. He gave it his all. Joel, this isn't a punishment, is it? Do you think it's, would you consider it a punishment?
The best punishment ever. Yeah. I mean, I don't play fantasy sports at all, but I mean, if I knew I was going to get dead last and that's what I had to do, I'd be like, all right, I'll suck up a season of fantasy to do it. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
So you're saying you would throw a season?
Yeah, I'm terrible at fantasy sports. Don't play them. I've tried twice, bombed in both times. I'm like, that's it. I'm out. Not for me. But yeah, if this was the punishment, sure, I think I'd suffer through a season of fantasy. But he looked the part. He looked like he was having a great time. I've never seen, a concept or punishment like that. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, so this, I think we all agree, not much of a punishment. What's a good fantasy punishment?
Well, Tass, I'm glad you asked because I've got three for you to choose from, and they're all baseball-related.
All right, baby. Yeah. So okay. The best baseball-related fantasy punishments. Well, what do you got?
Some of these – no, I'm not going to lie. Tass, I'm a bit cerebral, and I think I maybe took it to the next level with some of these. You've got to be brave. You've got to be brave if you want to do this. So my first one is you need to do three laps around Yankee Stadium dressed – in Jose Altuve's full uniform. And you just got to walk the concourse and you just got to take all that abuse from Yankees fans. I think that would be tough. I would not want to do that.
Oh, that's a good one. Did you say, you said walk? You have to stroll. You can't like run.
Yeah. No. You gotta saunter. You gotta saunter. You gotta keep it under 3 to 4 kilometers, Tess. You gotta just take it all in. Just go at a slow pace. And just take all that abuse from those Yankees fans.
Oh,
so
boy.
I think that would be a tough punishment.
Tass has done this one.
Oh, that's a
good one. Really?
Yeah, when the Nets returned after Vince Carter quit on the Raptors, Tass lost a pick and payoff, and he had to walk around the outside the ACC at the time wearing a Vince Carter jersey. Cool. He wore it backwards so you could see Carter and the number. So he had to face all of the anger of the Toronto fans. And he was extolling the virtues of Vince Carter. And Tass was very angry at Vince at the time, too, I would think. Right, Tass?
Yeah. It's a different relationship. You're right. You used the word quit on the Raptors.
Yep.
Fair.
Yeah.
That's a fair word. Yeah. And Vince wouldn't say it, but, he had had enough, and he was out of there. And, I was sitting there. Got slapped by one person.
Yep.
We may have asked that person to do a little slap.
Well, she put a little mustard, pardon the pun,
yes,
behind it.
But we're talking about Canadians here, so it wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
The New Yorker aspect, Joel, I would be getting lots of literal mustard. Hey, let's say it was
beer. Yeah.
Yeah, you get hit by something. You get hit by a dog. You get hit by something.
Yeah, you got to be brave. You got to be brave. And, Tass, your punishment, that kind of is a perfect segue into my second punishment. So you said, JD said you did this outside the ACC with a Vince Carter jersey. Yep. So my second punishment is outside of an A's game, you have to hand out flyers to A's fans saying John Fisher was right to sell the team.
Oh, that's brutal. Absolutely brutal.
I want it to be brutal. I want it to be uncomfortable. And the third one is just more of an uncomfortable eating challenge, but you have to eat two boomstick dogs. They serve them at the Texas Rangers games. They're, I don't know the exact length, but they're like massive hot dogs that you share. So you'd have to eat two boomstick dogs in a 9-inning game.
Yeah, doesn't sound as bad. I don't know how long they are, if we're talking 6-footers, but it doesn't sound as bad as telling a franchise that it was right. Your team should have been out of here. That sounds way worse than, listen, boomstick, it would go boom in a different way several hours later. It wouldn't be good, but yeah, I'd rather go with my digestive tract than try and deal with A's fans. That is brutal. I thought you were going to say, like, you could take it to another level, like dress in, you know, some sort of Vegas gear or something like that.
Tass, I like it. You evil, evil man, you taking it up a notch.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a blackjack dealer's garb or something, you know, like, or roulette dealer.
Or one of the showgirls.
Showgirls, yeah. As we've also done on our basketball show. That sounds brutal.
There was, and just while we're on the topic too, I saw this video recently on the show Impractical Jokers.
Oh, based in our hometown here of Atlanta.
Oh, is it really? I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay. But there was a segment where Joe, I don't know the premise of the show. I don't watch it. I just saw the clip. But anyway, this guy named Joe, he was at a Mets game and they said, you need to catch, like, Noah Syndergaard's going to sign balls and throw them in to the crowd, like at kids. You have to jump in and grab as many as you can and just take all the abuse. And he took this one girl's daughter. He's like, oh, just give me your daughter and, like, I'll get a ball from him, no problem. And obviously Syndergaard throws one up and he gives the daughter back and takes the ball and leaves. And the mom chases him down and starts screaming at him. And they're all, like, on the headset telling him what to say. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm a big Derek Jeter fan. And they're at a Mets game. And, like, I was crying laughing. But that would have been a pretty good, I feel, fantasy punishment to do something like that.
That'd be great. Sounds hard to pull off when you're thinking about TV production. But I guess they could do it. Those jokers, they've been joking for a long time. They know what's up. That's like a decade running for sure. Sal, Joe, Murr, Q, they've been killing it. Jared, who was on No Bunts last year as a Braves fan, telling us why the Braves were going to go back to back with World Series titles. He is the biggest Impractical Jokers fan in the history of Impractical Jokers. He'll just put it on in the background. Like, he'll just have it on at all times. So it's a great show.
Respect.
Here's a guy eating a boomstick, by the way.
Okay.
It's 2 feet long. It looks like there's chili and onions on it and cheese. So two of those. Man. I don't know, Tess. I don't know.
That looks longer than 2 feet, but I guess YouTube, yeah, the angle. We're looking down the barrel of the dog here. And
that's a beast.
We're on the opposite side of the Lady and the Tramp. We're about to call that Lizzie.
Yeah, that's not fun. All that meat on it, like meat on the
meat. All the green olives aren't going to save that pass. No way.
You took your boomstick and you knocked that segment out of the park, Joel. I appreciate that. Yeah, let us know on the Bleacher Creatures or on any of our social media platforms, what's the worst fantasy punishment? Is it getting into Yankee Stadium with the Altuve gear and just taking it from those nasty, nasty Yankee fans? Is it stepping outside the Oakland A's Coliseum and telling them it was right for your owner to take your team? Ugh. Or eating two boomsticks. I like it. I like it. The three different categories. Three different types of punishment. Great
stuff,
Joel.
You got to mix it up. You got to mix it up.
Well done. Well done. That's why you are cerebral, my man. all right. Great stuff. And you want to see other cerebral ideas from Joel, check out our social media page on Instagram, no_bunts. You've been rocking it lately, Joel. Make sure to check out the Athletic Baseball Show YouTube channel, where we stream live every Wednesday morning, usually at 8:15 Eastern. Or check us out on the Athletic Baseball Show podcast feed, wherever you get your pods, theathletic.com/baseballshow or theathletic.com/nodunks for great deals for the best sports writing in the world. We'll see you next Wednesday. For JD, for Joel, I'm Tess. We'll see you then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.